Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And today, Sonia, we wrap up Phoenix Month with the 33rd episode overall, the 7th episode of Season 3, The Phoenix Saga Part 5, Child of Light.
That's right.
What a crazy wild ride it's been.
Yeah, so it's the last week of Phoenix Month over here. And I, again, really enjoyed this episode, this last episode of the Phoenix Saga.
Maybe we should rank the episodes later in the podcast after we're done talking about it. That
right.
might be interesting, if we can remember them and keep them all straight.
Maybe.
our exploration to Phoenix Month has been a lot of fun, but perhaps not the smoothest enterprise. If you check out the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group, you can read comments from our loyal listener, Arthur, who set us straight on a lot of foggy details we had.
Thank you, Arthur.
Right, yeah, letting us know for sure that X-Men and Juggernaut are stepbrothers, not half-brothers, even though the show says half-brothers.
Yeah.
But I remember being confused about that, too, when watching the show, because I knew in the back of my mind that they were stepbrothers.
Well, there's a few details like that the show changes, and maybe it's for a reason and maybe it's not. I don't know, but...
They might have just messed up.
Yeah, exactly.
He also phonetically spells out the pronunciation of our favorite cat, Starjammer. I'm afraid to say it because I don't have it right in front of me. Hepzibah.
That's why we said it on last week. Hepzibah.
We're still getting it wrong, but he phonetically spells it out in case you're curious on how to pronounce it. He also goes into many other details about Muir Island, Banshee, and Moira MacTaggert, who's from Scotland, who's from Ireland, where Cassidy Keefe is. He sets the record straight. So we thank you, Arthur. But moving on, this is the final episode of Phoenix Month of the first Phoenix Saga, as we have said over and over. It picks up right where we left off last week, and a brief recap. Last week, it seemed that after a furious fight between the X-Men and the Imperial Shi'ar Guard, that all hope was lost as Daken grabs the crystal, chants some ancient Shi'ar sayings, and breaches the crystal.
Mm-hmm.
And Jean warns that everyone's about to get sucked inside of it. So it looks pretty bleak here, heading into the fifth chapter. So this episode opens where the mad Emperor Daken, like we said, he's breached the crystal, and right away he turns into Crystal Man.
Yeah, I like that animation sequence. I thought that was really cool because you can see that he has all these shiny facets. He looks
right.
kind of like Emma Frost.
But like the pink Emma Frost, because yeah. Emma Frost, the White Queen, she can turn her skin into diamond form, which is a pretty trippy effect.
Right, but it's kind of bluish when she does it.
Well, it depends on the either the comic book or the movie you're watching
mm-hmm.
of what color she facets off. But, you know, interestingly, by the time when this show was made, the White Queen had not yet had that power.
Mm.
That was something added later by, I believe, Grant Morrison. She gets an extra mutation.
Oh.
And he introduced the concepts of secondary mutations among mutants.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens to the Beast. He turns from a more ape-like creature to a more, like...
Cat-like
guy with less dexterous fingers. And Emma Frost gets her secondary mutation of, like, turning into a diamond.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what other mutants it happens for. I think a few of them, but those are the two most famous ones. But anyway, you're right. Daken... A very crystally man, a pink crystally man. He's
mm-hmm.
glittering. The animation in this episode is really, really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
However, like a lot of like insane, like trippy psychedelic stuff with like beautiful artwork and landscapes and cool effects.
Mm-hmm.
However, also I noticed quite a number of animation errors.
Yeah, well, which we've talked about. Like, they come
right.
up in this show, and it's like they kind of come up more and more as the seasons go on.
Right. I mean, this episode seemed pretty bad with the errors. I'll just list a few of them I saw. Like, in one scene, Wolverine's arms are bright yellow, matching the color of his costume,
mm-hmm.
but you still see the hair in his arms,
uh-huh.
which is funny.
Yeah.
And then another scene, Cyclops loses his gloves for a shot, and then he has them back in the next scene.
Yeah.
I don't think he took them on and off in those, like, split second. Also, in another scene, Wolverine's belt is like completely gone.
Uh-huh.
So
a lot of fashion disasters.
Right. Yeah, a lot of insane. But maybe it's the power of the crystal affecting everything in a bizarre way. I mean, obviously reality is being altered in a pretty messed up way.
There you go.
So let's attribute it to that. Okay. So Deken has the crystal power. Things seem to be working out for him right away, even though everyone's telling him, like, you've messed up, you know, the crystal and subsequently the galaxy and the universe. And he's just laughing away and blasting everybody. And he has a really funny, ridiculous line right off the bat. He says something, "You fools! Your foolishness amuses me!"
Yeah. To me, that's ultimate, like, 90s kid cartoon writing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it's like, kids are going to find that line funny, but, like, understandable.
I just think it's weird to declare somebody a fool and then immediately talk about their foolishness.
Yeah, that's what's appealing about it.
Well, I don't know if that appealing's right. To me, it's just there's something in terms of the writing.
I think it's lazy writing.
I don't know if it's lazy writing. I'm going to have to go inside of bad writing.
Okay.
Because if I was grading his essay, the writer's, like if this was an essay written by somebody, I would say.
Marks off for variety.
Right. I would say you have to come with a different word. You can't talk about fools and then foolishness in the next breath. Unless it's
generally
Shakespeare
that's
or something.
True,
right.
But,
yeah.
But what I'm saying is that I think it does appeal to kids when things like that happen. Because kids.
Why?
Kids don't...
Well, you're a teacher of children, so...
Kids don't, like, know that that's, like, a writing convention, but I think intuitively they know that people don't speak that way.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's, like, they know that there's something funny there, but they wouldn't be able to say what exactly. But I could see that being one of those lines, because the word fool is, like, a funny word
right.
to kids a lot of times.
Right,
I could
yeah.
see that being one of those lines that kids are, like, repeating over and over
yeah.
to each other, you know?
Yeah. So maybe a kid would realize that this guy's insane, the way
yeah.
he's talking. And he has gone insane. And, you know, Jean or somebody remarks that he's become one with the crystal and that he's creating his own universe inside the crystal. So that actually seems like a pretty good power for Deken. I mean, he has to live inside the crystal, which is bad.
Mm-hmm. Well, not for him.
Well, yeah, not for him, but it's ugly. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
It doesn't look... I mean, we see the crystal... what it looks like inside. It's a pretty hellish landscape.
Well, but it's because he created it that way, right?
Perhaps,
isn't the whole
right.
thing with the crystal that, like, he's creating with the inside?
So
is, like,
the inside of his mind is like a nightmarish hellscape.
Yeah.
Right, with, like, dark, foreboding red skies and lightning everywhere and
right,
ugly rock
saying,
formations.
I think it's, like, a manifestation of his mind, not of, like, what the crystal is actually on
right.
the inside.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. But still, he's trapped inside the... You know, but when they say he's trapped inside the crystal, though... They've also given the impression that the crystal's kind of infinite.
Mm.
So to be trapped in an infinite space doesn't seem that bad.
Right. Well,
so
it's
if he,
like
and if
a
he's
whole
the
galaxy,
god,
right?
Well, it's going to suck in the whole galaxy.
But it, what did they say? It was like the negative space of like a galaxy's worth of negative space
right,
was
yeah,
in there.
Yeah.
Which is essentially infinite because the galaxy is
well
enormous.
Well, yeah, true. But maybe to one person.
Uh-huh.
But to an infinite being as Deken is about to become, that... in itself is a limitation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like he's getting the universe. He's just getting... He's creating a universe inside the space of what we can think is a galaxy-sized realm,
uh-huh.
which is limited.
Okay.
So maybe they're warning him about that. I don't know. Anyway, it seems... Like I said, my only point about that, it seems not that bad for Deken. He gets to be the god of this little galaxy space.
Yeah.
Well, big galaxy space. Whatever. Carrying on... you remarked, Sonia, we get another pronunciation of one of our favorite characters in the last episode. We couldn't figure out how his name was pronounced.
Yeah, that's right. They're, like, in the spaceship talking to each other and, like, shouting orders around and whatever. And someone refers to that big green...
Lizard man
that we were struggling with the pronunciation. We knew it was, like, Chad or something like that.
Chad. It's spelled C-H apostrophe O-D.
But someone calls him Chode very clearly.
Yeah,
so,
he's Chode.
There you have it.
Yeah, so, I mean, unfortunately, an unfortunately named hero in the X-Men Marvel Universe, Chode.
Yep.
I mean, maybe it is Cha'od. I don't know. I mean, but, you know, because the people creating the show, they have their own interpretation.
Yeah.
But I think it's canon,
like,
that he's Chode now.
Big and green. Maybe it's like, you know, a little twist on Toad.
Right, that's something. That. You're right. That's exactly what it has to be. No, you're at, like, that is the one of the most brilliant things said on this podcast.
That's sad.
Yes, it's sad, but true. You're right. He's like a toad, but they are like, oh, but he's a chode. But they did. No one was thinking like the other meaning of chode.
Yeah. Now we're getting into name calling.
Right. Okay. Whatever.
So
that's funny. Okay. And also, I noticed around this time we see Jean as the Phoenix. She's flying around. She deposits all our heroes. She says something like, "I must learn. The crystal must be healed." Jean's like half possessed in this episode by the Phoenix.
Yeah.
You can't tell where Jean begins, right? Yeah, where Jean begins and the Phoenix ends, which is a good point to note because, as we'll see in the Dark Phoenix saga, in a month or so, Jean doesn't have this fine distinction of like where the Phoenix ends and where the Phoenix and where Jean begins.
Yeah.
Here, she's able to balance stuff out. So, good Phoenix. She can manage her multiple personalities. Bad Phoenix, less so.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, she deposits all their heroes on a spaceship, on the Starjammer ship, you know, because they were on Daken's warship where the crystal is.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, they're still orbiting the sun, Earth's sun. So as Jean does this, she turns into the Firebird. And I really appreciated the animation of this Firebird. They really brought this like thing that was drawn in the comics to life in a beautiful way.
Yeah, throughout this episode.
Yeah. And I thought, like, I just love the animation is really cool because it's almost like 3D, but it's not CGI. It's just hand-drawn in a really beautiful way.
It's well-done shading and coloring.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. It's a really cool animation. So that happens, and then we see in the distance, the X-Men see in the distance from the Starjammer ship that Daken's massive interstellar spaceship gets crumpled into the small space that is the crystal.
Mm-hmm.
And Wolverine has a classic movie line, "I got a real bad feeling, we're next."
Correct.
Yeah, so the cinematic level of this episode is peaking. This is, you know, a five-part miniseries, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And so each episode's 20 minutes, so like 20 minutes times 5 is what, like 100 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
so
an hour and 40 minutes.
An hour, is that what that is? So I can't do math. So an hour and 40 minutes. Yeah, so this is like a movie. So the movie is peaking here, and, you know, I guess we'll talk about it more as we wrap the episode up, but like, pretty good movie of the Phoenix saga, I'd have to say.
Yeah.
Like a real decent, you know, like back to back to back, you know, everything, it all lines up.
That would have been actually really awesome if that had been released like when we were kids. I would have like begged my parents to run out to the store and buy that if it was just like that five part series, like all
right,
strung together on one VHS tape.
I mean,
that would have been awesome.
Well, forget about a VHS tape. Batman Mask of the Phantasm.
Yeah.
Like, that was the Batman the Animated Series, like, nothing really different. The animation, like, a little more high budget, high mm-hmm. scale. But it was just, like, your standard, like, episode of Batman, but, like, spun out to movie length.
Yeah.
And released in theaters, and I saw that.
Me too.
They could have done that with this.
It. Yeah.
They totally could have just said the Phoenix Saga as the X-Men Animated Series movie and put a little bit more money in the animation so you wouldn't have all these errors and
stuff.
Well,
but the difference is, like, we had seen the storyline already, whereas Mask of the Phantasm was an original storyline.
But this would have been, I don't know, this, you're right, this could have been either straight to a VHS movie release or a limited movie theater run.
I guess I could have like queued up the VHS recorder.
Yeah. Well, that's what I did. I had it on, and, like, I taped every
just
episode.
Just taped them together, but
no, but
I wasn't with it.
But I mean, because they're individual episodes, you know, it still got the same sort of, I don't want to say the word cheap, but like we said, there's animation errors, there's got to be commercial breaks.
Right, yeah.
So you're right, this could have been an opportunity where they could have been like, this is a special thing and we're putting it in movies, and I would have gone. That would have been amazing.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's a big missed opportunity. It's kind of strange because, I mean, even though Batman's controlled by DC Warner Brothers, it was a show also on the Fox Kids Network.
Right.
So it's not like they, like, whatever corporate entity couldn't have made this happen. You know, I don't know if they needed Fox's permission to do the movie. I'm guessing not. I'm assuming Fox just syndicated the Batman show. They didn't obviously didn't own the rights of it.
Right.
You know, Warner Brothers did, but still interesting. Hmm. That was a very. I would have. This would have been a great animated movie. You're right.
Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. And then we see the crystal is really out of control. It's sucking everything in, and then we see it's close to the sun, so solar flare is being sort of sucked in now, like it's a black hole. You know, which is an interesting effect because it's like seeing what if you put a small black hole right next to the sun. Well, they show you like the sun starts to get sucked in, and then there are severe consequences for this back on Earth. Obviously, Jubilee's at Cassidy Keep still. And she sees the sun start to fade into black like it's an eclipse.
Hmm.
Now, as we were watching this, we got into an argument about what is going on. So I think there's two ways to look at this. One, you could just say that it's just like your standard eclipse right away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not your standard eclipse. It's an eclipse with like insane consequences on Earth. There's like the weather is getting all messed up. There's weird natural phenomenon happening. And we'll talk about that more in a second. Or you could look at it as that, like, the surface of the sun is rapidly being, like, extinguished.
Well, it's not, though. There's just, like, a blockade in between the sun and the Earth.
But why is the sun turned black from the perspective of Earth? That's the question. Because it looks like an eclipse.
Yeah.
Because the outer, just like an eclipse, you still see the sun.
The corona.
Right, the corona, the sunshine on the edge of the blackness.
Yeah.
But the crystal isn't the size of the sun or the moon relative to.
I thought it was like the black hole that the crystal is projecting or whatever.
I don't think the crystal's. All right, that's a good explanation. But I don't think that's what's going on either.
Uh-huh.
I don't think the crystal's projecting a black hole.
What do you think is going on?
I mean, well, what we see from space is the crystal's just sucking the sun in.
I like, don't mean a little projecting bit at a time. Exactly. I mean, like, the crystal is essentially becoming a black hole.
Right. Okay.
So I thought.
But
it
even
was,
still,
like,
the crystal's
between.
The crystal you can hold in your hand, the sun is a magnitude like 10 trillion times larger than the crystal.
Uh huh.
So I just think there's, like, I think the animation choice they made of showing the sun turn black from the Earth is, like, a confusing one. And not necessarily one that would be accurately representing what's going on in the moment.
Okay.
So I think that's our first problem.
All right.
Because I think if, like, because Jubilee says something like, the sun is fading away.
Yeah.
And that's bad news, obviously. But if the sun, I think there was like a, remember like that YouTube series called Vsauce,
mm-hmm.
where they do those like weird science videos?
Yeah.
They definitely had one. You could look it up where it's like, what would happen if the sun just disappeared instantly?
Mm-hmm.
And I distinctly remember saying that, like, they said that after the 8 minutes of when the last light of the sun reached the Earth,
mm-hmm.
before it extinguished, the Earth would like very quickly like freeze to death in the matter of like, I don't know if it was like a matter of minutes or hours, where the entire Earth would turn into like a frozen ball and we'd all die like right away.
I think it would have to be, I don't think it would be minutes. I think it would be a lot longer, because if you think about half of the Earth doesn't receive sun rays at all times. You know what I mean?
Well, there's a difference
between, everybody is in darkness for like 12 hours.
Yeah, but the heat of the sun, just because it's not getting the direct light of the sun,
mm-hmm.
there's still this ball that's 10 trillion degrees in the middle of the solar system,
mm-hmm.
that's warming everything everywhere. So the question is, if it disappeared, like, you have to imagine the heat expanding out concentrically from the center of the sun.
Yeah.
So then it's like now there's no sun there, so the last heat band would have passed Earth.
Yeah.
Because it's like the sun is constantly microwaving the solar system.
Right, but not the side. Like the quote unquote dark side of the Earth.
No, but
right?
But I'm saying that the heat is like all encompassing. The light is not all encompassing, but the heat is.
Well, they come together. All electromagnetic waves traveling from the sun towards the Earth, and it can only possibly hit the side that's facing the sun. But part of the thing with the Earth is, like, we have atmosphere for that exact reason.
Right, I know you're saying, because,
so, if it traps in the heat, and then, like, the Earth re-radiates some of it back out, and it gets stuck because the atmosphere is there. I think we'd be okay for a little bit, is all I'm saying.
All right, maybe you're right. But you're right, though, because I think there's planets like Mercury or something where it doesn't, like rotate the same way Earth does. Uh-huh. So it's got a dark side, and yeah. the dark side's like frozen inexplicably compared to the like roiling, boiling front facing side of Mercury.
Right.
So no, I think you're right about that. So I don't know how much time we would have. I think the Vsauce thing answers it. I just remember it being not that much time.
Okay.
So if the sun disappeared, I think in a day it would be the end. Whatever. That's fine. So a big calamity is now happening on Earth. And then, you know, Earth in this universe is filled with Marvel superheroes.
Yeah.
So we see a few of them. The first one we see is Sunfire. There's like...
He's catching, like flaming rocks that are being spewed out of Mount Fuji.
Oh, yeah, that's what's going... Right, yeah, that's cool. So he's blasting them because there's, like, a train going through.
Yeah, he, like, saves the train.
Right, yeah. You know, high-speed trains, quite in fashion in Japan. And, volcanoes is the natural enemy of a high-speed Japanese train, I would have to say.
I guess.
I like that staging of that scene. I think that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
And then we also see, who else do we see here? We see our old buddy War Machine, who's appeared on the show quite a few times. Mm-hmm. It's funny that they go to War Machine more than they ever do Iron Man.
Yeah.
I don't know why they keep showing War Machine and not Iron Man.
I mean, Iron Man wasn't really that popular before the Robert Downey Jr. movies, I think.
That's true. That is very true that, like, Iron Man was, like, he was definitely in the B-list of Marvel heroes.
Yeah.
He was not that popular. I mean, you know, the Avengers weren't quite as, you know, people have to understand that the Avengers weren't quite as popular in the 90s. I mean, in the Marvel hierarchy of things before the movies, well, that's not even true, because after the first movies to come out were like X-Men and Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So those were, and the reason those were made was because they were the most popular. Mm-hmm. So it was only the subsequent success of the like off-brand MCU, where they only had access to Iron Man, Thor, and Hulk, mm-hmm. and characters like that, that those things got more popular because Marvel knows what it's doing.
Yeah.
But the reality is Spider-Man and X-Men, you know, after decades of comic book writing, they were the ones that shook out as reigning supreme over the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. So things have since gotten inverted because of corporate, you know, rights holderships, which to me is sad and a problem. Other people don't have a problem with it. They like the fact that X-Men is separate from the Marvel Universe. Now Spider-Man has since rejoined, as we all know. But I still have a problem with it because X-Men's always been my favorite. And it's like, you know, people were like, I like that Fox controls the X-Men universe. It's not part of the MCU. It'd be too confusing and stupid. It's like, no, like, Marvel took the Avengers, let's face it, kind of sucked and no one cared about that much, and they made them awesome.
Yeah.
Imagine what they could do with a brand that was great, like the X-Men.
Yeah.
They'd make it super awesome, and, you know, you would think.
Right.
So, you know, that's just an aside there. But anyway, we see more cameos in this episode. We saw, like we said, War Machine, Sunfire. We also see, as I mentioned, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You just see his hand come into frame. You don't really see him, and he uses his spider webs. There's like some kind of tornado thing happening in New York City. Well, I guess there's like an oncoming tsunami.
All number of natural disasters around the world. Let's say Storm is still in New York, and she saves Brooklyn and Staten Island. We think it's the Verrazano Bridge that she's saving. So she's saving some of our lesser known boroughs. Thanks, Storm.
Well, I'm happy she saved Brooklyn, Staten Island. You know, I could take it or leave it, but I guess that's good too.
Okay, a little rivalry for you.
Well, yeah. We also see Alpha Flight save some people who we've seen in a previous episode. I wasn't sure if Alpha Flight would come back in the show. I guess they have in a cameo appearance.
They're good with cameos on this show. You know, we see a lot of extraneous mutants all the time.
We see Ms. Nari
more and more as the more and more as the season goes on. Even
right, Ms. Nari, the godchild of Storm, we saw in a previous episode. He's like got Quicksilver's powers. He can run really fast. So he's in Africa somewhere, saving the day. I think I jumped around a little bit. So that's what's going on Earth. Like, back on the spaceship with the X-Men and the Shi'ar Guard, who are now all teamed up in the Starjammers, three teams of super beings. You know, they're all worried they're going to get sucked into the crystal, too. It's at this moment that Gambit decides that he's going to die, and he suggests to Rogue that they make out again. And this is, like, the second time we've seen the X-Men on the brink of death, where Gambit, like, has a desire to make out with Rogue, which I think is kind of funny. I mean, it's not like he's, like...
He doesn't say anything to her. They just, like, have this meaningful look between them.
No, he says something.
Oh, he does?
He says, like, if we're going to go out, like, we should go out together.
Oh.
And they're about to kiss, but... their spaceship gets rocked too much, so they can't actually touch, because that would have been a problem for Gambit. He would have been knocked out by Rogue. But they all think they're going to die, and they wind up on the surface. They get sucked into the crystal world, and they wind up on the surface of this crystal, and it's pretty gross.
Yes. There's brains and organs, like, there's coming, like, out of the ground and pulsating.
Pulsating arteries. So I guess we can presume it's Ken's, like, biology is merging with the... rock-like substance going on in the crystal core.
Uh-huh.
So it's pretty, like, gross Lovecraftian stuff going on there. And as we talked about earlier, the crystal is quite the hellscape. Now, you think it's a reflection of Deken's mind.
Yeah.
I think it could be just what maybe the inside of the crystal looks like, too. Like, it's just not a pleasant place to be.
Okay,
like,
who knows?
Like, if they absorb the mind of, I don't know, you, who's a very placid, lovely person, it still might look like that. I don't think it would be, like, a beautiful, like, happy place, necessarily.
Oh. I don't know.
It's difficult to say. I think it's open to interpretation. I also wanted to say, we didn't mention it when all this bad stuff is going on Earth. I thought this was funny.
Mm-hmm.
Storm is giving a report to the professor from, like, the X-Mansion, from the Cerebro room.
Oh, yeah, she's showing him, like, what's going on out in the world, and she looks like a weather woman.
Yeah, she's, like, reporting the weather to Professor X. She's got, like, a graph behind her, and she's pointing at it.
She's on screen in
her tight, like, silvery dress.
Right.
Which I think is funny, because we watch a lot of morning news, and we're always making fun of the weather women on the shows, because they're all wearing the same dress. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, like...
Maybe it has something to do with the green screen. Like, it has to be, like, form-fitting for the green screen or something.
Well, if you watch any local weather woman in New York, and I'm sure it's true in most local affiliates, like, the women are wearing, like, skin-tight dresses that are... It's, like, all one color.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just bizarre.
Has to be for the green screen.
You would think so.
Do they even use green screen anymore?
Yeah, absolutely.
For weather?
I'm almost certain. Unless they have a large, like, flat panel touchscreen. I mean, I know...
Seems like it would just be easier, doesn't it?
Yeah,
that
but
that... technology, like, exists. It's, like, widespread now.
But
so.
The question is... A digital camera filming a flat panel touchscreen, sometimes there's weird artifacts. It doesn't, like, film properly.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean.
But the technology might have since evolved. Like, who knows, like, where they could film a flat screen. I don't know, because I just know on CNN, like, on election night sometimes, you have Anderson Cooper, like, with this elaborate touchscreen that he's pressing all the time.
Yeah.
And things are happening, and he's looking at the screen.
Right.
Whereas, like, a weather person traditionally is, like, looking at the camera.
Right.
Because they have to see the projection, because you're right, they're in front of a green screen. They can't see what's on the green screen. They have to look forward.
Yeah.
This is an insane divergence.
Sorry for the tangent.
No, but that's just funny, though. So, Storm the Weather Woman, how appropriate.
Yeah.
In another universe, that might have been her job. Back on the crystal surface, Deken is having a grand old time tormenting and teasing the X-Men, the Starjammers, and the Imperial Guard. Now, the Imperial Guard, interestingly, is fully on Lilandra's side, in the X-Men's side, after having previously defended the Emperor, as is their charge. I thought that was interesting because Gladiator, the leader of the Imperial Guard, refers to Lilandra as Empress in this episode.
Yeah, she got an upgrade.
Yeah, before she was the princess, I'm pretty sure. They don't call her Empress in the previous episodes. So now, I guess Gladiator realizes that Deken is no longer in charge of things, and that the line of succession has moved on to Lilandra.
Hmm.
So that's pretty interesting. And so, like I said, he's tormenting and teasing everybody. He's, like, blasting them with laser beams, and he's creating all these weird rock monsters for them to fight. And the X-Men and everyone else are trying to, like, like, fight him. And at one point, Lilandra tries to use logic with Tekken. She goes up to him, and he's, like, this mad mountain man now, just cackling in the distance.
Yeah.
She says, like, the crystal's going to destroy you and destroy everyone else. You know, and he's like, destroy me? The crystal is life. I am reborn. And, you know, so he is, like, not being convinced. For him, things are still going great.
Right.
And then what happens next? Like I said, there's a futile fight between the X-Men and Tekken. You know, he's creating all these rock monsters. They're doing their best to fight him. It's pretty, like I said, really cool animation. You know, Tekken's like laughing and turning into all sorts of weird shapes. And at one point, there's like a silly little moment where like the Shi'ar guard guy who can sort of like turn into a giant himself, kind of like Ant-Man.
Mm-hmm.
He rises up to Deken's side, who's like the size of a skyscraper, and he knocks Deken over, and Deken shatters into a million pieces.
Yeah, and then he just laughs.
Right, he laughs, but we see Beast for a second.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Beast, like, gives like a...
Like a little fist pump. He's like, yeah.
Fist pump victory. He's like smiling. He's like, oh, we did it. Deken's finished. That's like a minor, like, Ghostbusters moment where they shoot Gozer and Gozer disappears and the Ghostbusters think they won, like, real quick.
Yeah.
It's like, no, they clearly did not win. So sorry, Beast. You're so smart otherwise, but here you have no idea what's going on.
Optimistic, that's all.
Right. And then, so, you know, like, bad stuff is going on. Things don't seem to be going well. Another, like, quick thing we see, which is really gross, we see Jean, like, smeared on the pavement there.
Yeah, that drawing is really odd. She's, like, completely flat, two-dimensional. Like,
it's like if someone, like, ran her over with a steamroller.
Yeah, really weird.
And it's like, that's the implication, and it's gross, because... That's what it might look like if you were run over with a steamroller in your clothes. Like,
yeah.
Just smeared clothing and blood.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't show blood, obviously, but...
It's like a weird choice, though.
Yeah. So it looks like Jean is, like, smashed and
done
dead.
For.
Right, so the X-Men are really left on their own for the time being. But, you know, it turns out she's fine. But anyway, of course. But at this point, like, Deken is, like, smashing the ground, and all the X-Men are falling... Like, on these, like, falling stone platforms, and it looks really perilous now. You can't even trust the ground. And what are they falling? They're just falling into a void. And, like, you know, Beast is trying his best to catch people and flip onto the rocks, and Wolverine the same. And it just reminds me of, like, a really hard Nintendo game.
Yeah.
I just got Mario Odyssey this weekend, and I've been obsessively playing it.
Yep.
And so it's, like, driving my brain crazy because there's a lot of, like, crazy platform moments like that. So I can really relate.
You see it everywhere now.
Yeah, I can really relate to the X-Men here in that moment. But anyway, Jean's okay, and she's just been learning about the crystal in the meantime. I don't know why she was, like, a flat object at one point. But she emerges, and she transports all the X-Men out of this dangerous situation. She puts them back on the Landra starship. So they're all safe, and it's funny to me. It's like... Jean is clearly now the most powerful being in the galaxy or the universe, more powerful than Deken, and yet she's still fainting.
She's still Jean, so...
Right. I just think that's... It's like, no matter how strong Jean gets, she still is collapsing in the arms of Cyclops at various points. And sort of the Phoenix... Jean explains that Jean was chosen for her incredible empathy. And it's going to... She's... Through Jean's insights with the power of empathy, she has learned how to fix the crystal. Like, Jean saw the crystal's pain where the Phoenix could not.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the catalyst to save the day. And, you know, Jean at this point has to start saying her goodbyes to the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
And people are tearing up and... you know, we talked about in the previous episodes that Professor X notes that him and Lilandra share a bond deeper than love, and we could only speculate as to what that means. But here it seems that Jean has one-upped Professor X with Cyclops, and she and Cyclops seem to have a bond deeper than love. Because they start making out, and her hair, like, catches on fire.
And there's, like, they rise up twirling into the air and
with glittery glitterness,
sparkles all around them.
And they're making out, and she's speaking to not only Cyclops but the whole team in like an in like a narration over voice, you know, as she's kissing Cyclops. That to me looks like a bond deeper than love. That's the evidence right there. So she really shows up Lalandra and Professor X.
Yeah, which seems to have like steamed out a little bit,
right?
You know,
yeah,
it's like, anyway, we'll get to them
in
a little bit.
We'll get to them in a little bit, exactly. But yeah, so Jean, like, her plan involves, she needs to, like, take the best personality traits from all the X-Men to seal up the crystal. She needs their strength.
I thought it was more like she was using, like, they show, like, a mental projection of each of them, and she's like, you know, for your courage, and it shows Wolverine,
right,
and for your
heart, and it shows Storm
Beast
or something,
or whatever,
right,
whatever,
yeah,
it is, right? Like, I thought
I didn't
was...
feel like writing them all down.
Yeah,
it's too lame.
Right. But I thought it was more that she was like using that as inspiration to give her strength, you know, like,
right, yeah, it's either inspiration or she's giving them all peace. Or they're all giving her a piece of something to take with her. I forget, in the original comic, it's something similar. She like they all like have to hold hands in a circle or something and give Jean like a piece of their strength.
Because that's not what happened here. They're all just like standing around and she's like listing off the traits about them. I thought it was more like, it's like a mantra or something like that, right? Like,
yeah.
Where she's like using the focus of like thinking about each of them to like fuel her own strength or something.
Right, it's open to interpretation again too.
Yeah,
and also this is like a common trope in all these like movies, these sci-fi movies too, where like the heroes have to bind together and like use their combined love to save the day.
Right,
I feel like it was something similar in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie at the end of the first one where that happens. They're all holding hands after having done like a dance sequence and stuff. And
we're all so different and yet we have to help each other.
Right. Yeah. All, you know, right. Exactly. Like that, like that's the lesson, that our differences, it's really like creating like a bridge of love, and
yeah,
our bridge of love is stronger than any evil force.
I mean, that's a good lesson.
It's a good lesson, but I think it's a lame lesson. it's cheesy because they show what this all adds up to. They show this, like, there's a tree. Okay, guys, there's a tree. Have you seen a Darren Aronofsky movie anytime recently? There's a tree out there, and then the X-Men are, like, in the worst drawing in the show's history, I think. And season 5, the animation goes way down the toilet, so this ranks up there. The X-Men are, like, superimposed on this tree of life, let's say. Imagine a tree of life. They're imposed on it, like, stacked on top, you know. Some people are the
strong trunk, and others are the branches,
right,
that reach to the sky.
Right, yeah. Almost like a mind.
Right.
And so that's what's going on. So you see, like, Wolverine and Cyclops or whatever are the trunk, and Storm's the branch at the top for some reason. And that's what allows Jean to seal up the crystal. She creates a tree of life somehow. The X-Men are a part of it. We're all love. It's love.
Yeah.
Love rules the day. Love saves the day. And but weirdly, that's not where it ends, because Jean, as the Firebird, like, comes back and she's like, okay, well, the crystal's sealed, but it's still dangerous. And the only thing I can do, I have to seal, I can't, I want to destroy the crystal, which she implies.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
But then she says, like, well, it can't be destroyed.
Right.
So I have to put it someplace where no one can ever get it.
In the center of the sun.
Right, which is the center of the sun.
Now, this, unlike the last scene, which I thought was kind of lame, I think this is cool.
Yeah.
Because...
Tell us more.
Well, I just, in the realm of, like, science fiction, I always think it's interesting to travel to the sun.
Why?
I don't know, because you can't... The sun is an object, or any star is an object in space, which is real.
Yeah.
Stars are real, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, but they're so powerful that no living being could ever think to get close.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would fry up in a second.
Yeah.
Or if they had insane heat invulnerability, they'd be crushed by the sun's gravity, you know, or they would be blinded. You know, like, whatever... The sun is, like, such a... A non-trespass zone.
Okay.
You know, it's actually funny.
That's why the crystal has to go there.
There's all this, like, there's all this science panic out there about black holes.
Yeah.
Like, you watch a documentary or an educational program about, like, the cosmos.
Yeah.
And the scientists always get on, it's like, don't get close to a black hole, you'll be spaghettified. It's like, dude...
You'd be dead long before you were spaghettified.
Yeah, so we can't really even matter. Go to the moon without a spacesuit. Like, we can't go to... Okay, the moon's a bad example because you can go there and live in a spacesuit. You can't go to Venus with a spacesuit.
Right.
That's our closest planet, right? And you would be, like, fried up in a second on a stupid little rock like Venus.
Yeah.
So forget about the sun is just as bad as a black hole. Mm-hmm. You can't get close to the sun.
Right.
So it's like an object like a black hole already exists in our own solar system. Yes, it gives us life, and it's, like, the source of all our, like, origins and stuff. But at the same time, as an object to get close to, mm-hmm. it's bad news. Like, you know.
Yeah.
So
you're more intrigued by the sun than you are by black holes.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying the sun's right there. A black hole, like, is not even close to us anywhere.
I think people are more fascinated with black holes because they're more mysterious, because you can't really see them since it's so, you know, mm-hmm. they're pulling
right,
in all
they're
the
invisible.
Light. And because there's, like, a little bit of mystery about, like, well...
What's on the other side?
Is there another side, and where does all this stuff go?
But
and, like, is it actually a wormhole that's going to spit you out in, like, another part of the universe, or, like...
But that's just, like, saying, like, what happens to you after you die? I mean, that's, like,
right.
almost the same question. It's, like, no one knows... It's, like, an unanswerable question.
Right. But that's the thing, is, like, with the sun, it's totally answerable. It's, like, you get within a certain distance, and you're dead.
Right, Okay, but that's why I think it's interesting when you go to the sun. Like, the phoenix can go to the sun.
Yeah.
So, it's, like, what would, like, the surface of the sun look like if you got up close?
Well, it's a gas, so it's not a surface.
Okay, true. But I'm saying, like, what would it... The point is, like, what would it look like? And here Jean says to Cyclops in a voiceover, she's like, oh, Scott, if you can only see the light, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And first of all, I thought that was a little burn on Cyclops because he has trouble seeing in the first place.
I thought it was just reinforcing, like, the love connection.
It is, but I just think it's also, like, a small burn on him for some reason.
I don't know.
Anyway, because she's talking about the white light of the sun.
Yeah.
And that's another cool thing that they animate properly. The sun, friends, is white, not yellow, as it is, like, commonly drawn by school children. And in general, represented by most depictions of it, you know. The sun's like this yellow ball, right?
It is. It's a yellow star.
No, it's not. But it's actually white. Okay, everybody, you're not going to be able to tell, but we just took a 10-minute break because we were having an intense argument about what the color of the sun is. So we did an enormous amount of research on the internet, reading Stanford papers on it and Wikipedia and other things. And so, Sonia, do you want to report the findings?
All right, so the sun is technically classified as a yellow dwarf star. However, it's emitting light across the entire electromagnetic spectrum, and the peak of our sun's photon export is actually green.
Which is stunning.
Yes. It puts out more green light than any other color. However, it is essentially white because it's putting out
all colors right.
of visible light.
And there's an interesting line in one of the articles you read saying that scientists do not know why most human beings associate the sun with being yellow color. Which I think is actually... I mean, I think there's an answer to that question, is that in sunrise and sunset, it has a red-orange color. But if you look at the sun in the middle of the day, it is white. It's not yellow
right.
in the blue sky. So, whatever. We had a long... There's a lot cut out here.
That was a real heated argument.
But we've been convinced that the sun is white. And anyway, so back to the X-Men. What I think is cool is that Jean's flying to the surface of the sun. It's this white thing, and they show some, like, orange solar flares, which is, you know, for animation
purposes.
It looks
cool, yeah.
Right. But anyway, I just think it's interesting to get close to the sun is all. I find that I wish it was possible to send, like, a solar probe into the sun, which is something that... the NASA scientists in this X-Men universe were doing in this Phoenix saga.
Yeah, that's right. They had their solar probe with them.
Right, yeah. It would be cool if that was real, if you could actually send things into or close to the sun to get some readings on it.
Hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I find it kind of touching that Jean is, like, really, like, blown away by the color of the sun or the light of the sun. Mm-hmm. It's, like, really, like, profound to behold.
Yeah.
To be, like, surrounded by light, pure light. Like, who knows what that's like. So anyway, Jean, you know, she has to now go live in the center of the sun with the crystal to protect it. And so by all intents and purposes, she's dead for the right. The X-Men, they've been returned to Earth. They've saved the day, as Professor X announces. Everyone's really sad. And here we see the first parting of ways between Professor X and Lilandra. Now, he says something that I thought was really funny. He says, Lilandra's like, come with me, and, you know, we're in love. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, I can't really go with you because there's... until peace between humans and mutants is exists, I have to stay on Earth.
Right.
And that's the same excuse the Morlocks give to Storm when she invites them to the surface to live in the X-Mansion.
Yeah.
They're like, until peace between humans and mutants happens, we'll never leave the sewers.
Well, no, that's different, though, because they're not leaving the sewers because they're afraid.
Right.
Professor X is not leaving Earth because he feels like it's his personal mission to make that peace happen.
True, but my...
So the Morlocks are waiting it out, and Professor X is really, like, I don't know, like, determined or something. He's driven to, like, be the one to drive that change, you know?
Fine, but in both cases, it's never going to happen, so...
Yeah.
It's like basically saying goodbye forever, Lilandra. although she promises that she'll return. She's like, well, okay, but I'll be back.
Right. So but she says the same thing about her world. She says, right. Like, oh, I have to go back because I have to, like, pick up the pieces after this whole business with Decan and make sure that my people are fine.
That's true. They both have too much responsibility to pursue their love relationship. But there goes their bond deeper than love. Like, they, like, kissed one time and barely spent any time together.
Right.
And now, like, they're saying goodbye to each other. So, Corsair and Cyclops share a moment, and it's kind of, like, stupid. I thought that was a little ham-fisted, because they never even learned that they're father and son.
Right.
So the fact that they have some parting words is, like, bizarre to me. It doesn't, like...
Well, also because, like, with the dialogue, they draw a lot of parallels between them. So it's like, if you know that they're father and son, you're like, eh.
Yeah,
but if you don't know, you're like, what the hell? Like,
yeah, it's kind of like, why would Cyclops bother to even care about Corsair?
Right.
I mean, Cyclops mentions that he's moved by Corsair's dead wife, and now he has Jean's dead, presumably. Right. So they have that in common, sort of.
Yeah.
And then Beast has some words of wisdom from Emily Dickinson, the famous poet. Parting is all we know of heaven and all we need of hell. Very, very fitting. Beast is always summing up moments with great literature.
Yep.
So good on Beast, dropping some Emily Dickinson culture on the audience. Wolverine has his own creepy moment.
Where he has, like, a photograph of Cyclops and Jean together.
The same photo that he's been, like, carrying around throughout
close
the entire
to his
series.
Heart.
Yeah.
His
the one that he's, like,
heart.
Stabbed, you know? And, like, burned. He's, like, burned Scott's face with, like, a light. Like, I don't know. Like, he's really in the creep squad here. he's mourning over Jean, too. And then it ends with Professor X trying to help Cyclops grieve. He says, you know, the legend of the Phoenix, essentially it'll rise again, you know, like that's what the Phoenix is.
Yeah.
So, you know, words that don't exactly resonate with Cyclops right at that time, but he's looking off into the distance crying, his visor is welling up with tears.
Or it's the reflection of the ocean, maybe.
Right. Either way, he's
staring
sad.
Out into the sea.
Yes, it was funny.
Yeah.
And then we see Jean's face superimposed. Perhaps Jean is not lost to us. And surprise, surprise, she's not. She comes back, because we all know.
Well, we know the Dark Phoenix is coming.
All right, anyway, so that's the end of Phoenix Month. Hooray!
Hooray!
Yay! So I wanted to... first of all, I thought this episode was really good.
Uh-huh.
Very good episode. very consistent Phoenix saga overall, I thought.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the whole thing.
Yeah.
I like that it lined up perfectly, the ending with the day before Halloween.
Yes.
That was wonderful.
Right.
Not planned, but wonderful.
Yes. Why? Is there any reason?
I don't know. No. It just, like, ties up in a neat little package. And
right. If we had to rank the episodes...
Oh, yeah.
I would say that my favorite episode is the one where Professor X loses his mind. It's after the they come back from space and they land in the harbor in New York.
Yeah.
And Professor X's Dark Side's unleashed. I think that's my favorite.
What is that, episode 2?
Yeah, I think that's the second episode. Of the saga. There's a lot going on in that episode. We see lots of slice of life stuff from the X-Men, which I always appreciate.
Yeah.
We also get like formally introduced to Lalandra at the end, and she has her modulated voice, which we agreed was like the best version of Lalandra.
Oh, but that was the first episode.
Well, no, but it's in
it's the first episode where she appears, which is actually the second. Yeah.
Right. So when she appears to Professor X in Muir Island, she's got the modulated voice, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. There's a lot of funny details going on in that episode, some great cameos going on. So that's my favorite episode.
I think my favorite episode is probably the one where, let me think, when Jean, like, first becomes Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you see her, like, I don't know, like, flying through outer space. It's just, like, real psychedelic, like, sequences with the bug ships, like, blasting lasers all over the place. And then, like, Jean as the Phoenix, like, coming out of the water.
Oh, so the first episode. Yeah. Right. Okay, yeah, that's cool, yeah.
Yeah.
And they really captured that iconic moment from the comics when she blasts out of the water.
Right.
And says, I am Phoenix!
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good episode.
It's like a really beautiful episode, like, visually. Like,
very cinematic.
Yeah.
They really establish the mystery of what's going on. It's like an episode, it's a bizarre episode because it's so, you really have to keep watching for it to make sense.
Right.
Because there's, like, it's so much, like, setup.
Right.
And that's good because it really gets, like, hooks
you build
the
anticipation.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I also really like the Juggernaut episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's really ridiculous to see Juggernaut always and Black Tom, and we get to see Banshee, which is fun. And, we see, like, I like that they show, like, that Juggernaut's really strong, and then that Gladiator is stronger than Juggernaut, and Phoenix is stronger than Gladiator. I like those, like, displays of, like, magnitudes of power,
mm-hmm.
which I always find funny. I don't know, it's just, like, a great, like, delicious episode in the middle of
a
the whole thing.
Salad?
Yeah. I didn't mention it in that episode, but that was, like, one of the, like, first early famous meme episodes with the X-Men.
Uh-huh.
Where some, like, group of jackasses, like, overdubbed that episode with the Juggernaut. And we're like, I'm the Juggernaut, bitch.
Uh-huh.
I'm the Juggernaut. Like, that's all he says. And it's, like, really stupid and sophomoric.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, like, sort of funny in a way. Like, I never really got it, like, why that was funny. And, like, but it did take off. That uh-huh. was, like, something. So just throwing that out there in
so
case anyone cares about the Juggernaut bitch reference. Well, it's stupid because they ended up using that joke in the X-Men 3 movie when they have the Juggernaut. And we'll talk about that one day, like how problematic that entire movie is.
Yeah.
That was so popular that it made it into a movie, and that's of the cartoon, so
right.
That's something.
Ridiculous.
And then, you know, my least favorite episode is probably the Starjammers episode.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That one also had a lot of good outer space sequences, though.
True.
I always like those.
I don't know. This is, like, too much, like, Jean fainting and...
Yeah.
The staging is, like, weird because they're on all these different spaceships, like, Lalandra spaceship and the Starjammers and Dakens, and it's, like, just confusing as to, like, where they are and what they're doing, and...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just, like... It's just setting up the final episode, which I thought was really good.
Yeah.
So, I didn't really... The Corsair stuff doesn't, like, hit me emotionally. I just find it, like, too contrived.
Mm.
The fact that, like... And this goes to the comics, too. That, oh, it's... Cyclops' dead father is really alive, and he's a space pirate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, yeah, okay. That's cool, I guess. But also... Sometimes I think it's better. Like, in all these comics, they always bring the parents back to life, even though you think they're dead.
Mm.
I think they did that with Batman, too, that
really?
Thomas Wayne was really alive, and he was, secretly... And he's, like, a bad guy, or something's going on with him.
Mm.
And, you know, I don't know if that's taking place in an alternate dimension or something, but, as you know, when these comics run forever, characters who are dead end up actually living. And that is actually the heart of the Phoenix saga.
Yeah.
As a trope. you know, spoilers for the Dark Phoenix, she's supposed to die.
Yeah.
Although that's how it was originally written in the comics. Although they made and she does die in the comics, mm-hmm. and that was like a big deal. But then they bring her back to life a few years later in X-Factor, and that was like a great deal of annoyance to the writers that killed Jean. I'm mm-hmm. guessing Chris Claremont. They're pissed, but it's like that's just what happens in comics. A character dies, but then they resurrect them,
right?
Like somehow, so no one stays dead. And Jean Grey, most famously, and like we said, and then they kill Jean off again at some point. I think Grant Morrison kills her. He tries to kill her for good, but then I've said in a previous episode, I've read recently that they're bringing Jean back to life again. They're doing another Phoenix Saga or something. They're bringing Jean back. So you know, like that's just the nature of the nature of Jean Grey, the character, more than anyone else. But also like a rule in comics that no one stays dead forever.
Right.
Actually, I think the rule famously is like no one's like dead forever except for Bruce Wayne's parents. Like that's like the
except
joke
that,
of it,
right?
Though right, except
that didn't
right.
Really
I don't
either.
Think it held true. I mean, I'm not the biggest Batman expert in the comics, so someone could correct me there. But I'm pretty sure Thomas Wayne like reemerges.
Huh.
So weird. But yeah, but that's Phoenix Month. So that's all we got this week as far as that goes.
Yep.
I'd like to say all our normal stuff at the end here. Follow us on Facebook. Join the Facebook group, X-Men Task Podcast. You're welcome to join. Talk to us. Correct all our mistakes. Yell at us. Let us know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong. It's always fun to expand that community. Also, follow me on Twitter, at Willie Simpson. Remember to rate and review the podcast wherever you can do so. I guess most preferably on iTunes. I think that's where it means the most. But, you know, whatever podcast format you use, give us 5 stars, leave a review, that really helps. Follow at X-Mentass on Twitter. Those are Eric and Julia Leewald, the writers, and their book is coming out soon, previously on X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
That should be really cool, like the whole backstory of the show. We'll be getting that and discussing that when that happens. And also, we just want to thank the fans again. You know, we're getting, you know, I mentioned it every once in a while, but our listenership is always growing. It's really touching and flattering, and we're just having fun here doing the show, and we want to thank everyone. And
yeah, we appreciate you guys.
Yeah. So coming up, I think it's going to be like 4 or 5 regular episodes.
Yes.
And then it's going to be the Dark Phoenix Saga.
Right.
Which I think lines up with December. We might not get a whole even month like we did out of the Phoenix Saga. This like lined up with the stars perfectly, where
yeah.
it was like all of October is Phoenix month. And it might be the case with December. And I actually think there's only 4 weeks of Dark Phoenix month.
So maybe it will be perfect.
It might be. We'll see.
Well.
So we'll have to see. So that's all I have to say at the end of Phoenix month. Do you have any last words, Sonia?
Beware the green sun. It could get you into a heated argument with your friends and loved ones.
Yeah, that's right. When arguing over the sun, just remember to keep it civil. All right. Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.